Okay, let's go. 3, 2, 1.
Hello, everyone.
And welcome to the
You Don't Look Like an Engineer podcast. In today's episode, we have Vanessa,
who joins us from California and is a
transportation engineer.
And in the last year, she was also nominated as the one of the top 50 women of influence in engineering by the San Diego Business Journal.
She reached out to us because she is also very interested in changing the face of STEM and engineering. Yeah, we're really excited to have her, and we're really thankful that she chose us as a platform to share her story.
We cannot wait for you to get to know her. So, Vanessa, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Thank you. So my name is Vanessa. As mentioned, I am far from Australia. I'm all the way in California, Southern California, and I am a civil engineer. I've been in the industry for a little over 7 years now as a full-time civil engineer. I went to school at San Diego State University, and prior to that, I attended community college. How I got into civil engineering, I say that I stumbled upon it because I didn't know what I wanted to be, what I wanted to do, and I love it now, and I just continue to advocate for civil engineering or just STEM in general. And, you know, I just kind of stumbled upon also your podcast, which I'm really excited to be talking with both of you today, because, you know, there's this stereotype of, you know, you don't look like an engineer. And anytime when I was in school, there was many people who were asking me, oh, what is your major? And I would tell them, and they basically, without having to say it, telling me that I don't look like an engineer in a way. So I definitely resonated with this podcast, and I'm happy to be here.
And have you always been in the same discipline? Like, have you always done transport?
No, actually, I started off, my first internship, it was very general civil engineering. I worked for a local city here in California, still trying to figure out what to do. It was one of the few jobs that were available, so I just took the opportunity. After that, I did internship in land development for a couple of years as an intern, and then I worked there full time. So land development, I'm not sure if all the viewers know, but it's basically like general civil, where I'm developing plans, working on drainage stormwater reports, working with landscape architects and contractors to a lot of the land development projects that I worked on were commercial development. So like hotels and shopping centers. So that was really interesting. Yeah.
It's a very high-paced industry, yeah, with developers and all of that. The budgets are always, at least here in Australia.
And for anyone always listening, who can't appreciate how well-rounded that experience is to be able to have that much interaction with so many disciplines in your first or, well, second stint.
Yeah.
That's a good foundation.
Yeah, I definitely think that was really helpful for me, starting off with land development, because it was so broad and I literally touched on, so many different things. And although I'm not doing land development anymore, I think a lot of the technical knowledge from working there has really helped the basis of what I do now and understanding the design concepts and just kind of expanding on that.
So if you were to try to explain what you do now to like a 10-year-old, what would you say?
What I do now to a 10-year-old, I would say that I design the roadways and different pathways that you take to go to school, for your parents to go to work. If you ever go to, if you ever ride your bike with your family, I'm one of those people who help you or help design those bikeway paths that go to and from wherever you need to be. Just kind of simplifying it as much as possible in that way. Yeah. I'm one of the people behind those types of projects. And for general civil, I usually like to tell 10-year-olds that civil engineers are undercover superheroes because we design everything that you're using every single day.
Yeah, Oh, that's a nice nickname. I feel like as over here, empowering. It is very nice.
She's never gonna shut up about this one.
Yeah, I'm like, excuse me, I'm a superhero. So we believe in our podcast and based in like in our experience that choosing your career is sort of like deeply rooted in your childhood or your family members sort of like shape your decision by the way you are brought up or like the conversations that we have at the dinner table. Sometimes we choose to follow what our parents did. Sometimes we choose to run away from what they did and try something different. So you said that you stumbled upon civil engineering, right? Mm-hmm. But do you think there was something in your family or your friends or you anything that inspired you to choose it? Yeah.
Honestly, like it was really... I had no idea like what I wanted to do. And I'm sure a lot of people felt that way. When I did choose civil engineering, it was when I was at community college. I didn't pick civil specifically actually when I graduated high school because I was still, again, figuring out what exactly I wanted to do. A family friend actually told me about a different engineering discipline. I looked into it and I ended up not choosing that specific engineering discipline. And I took an intro to engineering class at my community college. And that helped me pick civil. But from my childhood or even from my family members, I don't think I had any influence in that. Surprisingly, I know there's a lot of people that I've talked to how they picked this industry, this career path, they all seem to have some sort of connection. I don't have anyone in engineering in my family. Right. So I don't know. Like, I don't know if that family friend didn't talk to me about it. I don't think I would be where I am today. I guess I really liked math and science, which is like that stereotypical thing when it comes to like getting into engineering. But I also,
just because it's a prerequisite anyway.
It's just my favorite subjects. But yeah, I honestly like thought I wanted to do something more creative growing up. Like,
oh yeah,
I liked dancing. I like to sing. Like I'm Filipino, as my background. So you know, Filipinos, we love to sing, karaoke, dance. Like you don't, if you know a Filipino, they usually do one or the other.
Yeah.
So like those, like that, or like I like to dress up. At one point, I, you know, thought I wanted, I think YouTuber thing was like still very new, and I wanted to try that or play around with makeup. There's definitely like a lot of girly things that I liked. I loved getting Barbies for Christmas, and my cousins used to make, like, I think they used to make fun of me, but I loved it. I loved Barbies and I loved dressing up, all the girly things. But I don't know, I never, I guess, before saw the connection between the two, but now it's like, no, I want to connect them all. Like I want to be both girly and I want to be in civil engineering or like just STEM in general. So
because you can be both, and unfortunately the stereotypes for so long have been like, no, it's only very boyish women who are in civil engineering.
You can only be pretty, you can't be smart. Oh, that's really interesting. So you reckon if you hadn't chosen civil engineering, you would have gone through like a media sort of like career, or what would have kept you picked?
I think I would have gone in a media type career because I definitely still love taking photos. I still love doing creative things like that, or editing videos sometimes, or always try to like do something new. But definitely I couldn't see myself in the medical field.
I can relate to you a lot. Wow. That was a keyword. I'm like, no. This girl is like me.
Yeah, it's like,
because you had the YouTube thing going too, hey?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, we're really, this is why we were meant to meet.
And I'm Latina as well. Well, I'm Latina, and Filipinos are like also conquered by the Spanish people. So I'm like,
a lot of our language is the
same. We have similar too.
You have similar trauma.
Yeah. Great, thanks. So,
you brought colonization, bro.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll go into a happier note. I think though, and please let me know what you think about this. I think that those, I guess, traits, like being creative or all of these skills, yeah, they're more skills and traits, are easily transferable to engineering. Mm-hmm. Have you noticed that, like, the creative way of thinking has benefited your progression in their career?
Yeah, definitely. I think even more so in, like, some other engineering, like, I think civil, there are times where I try to be creative and use that aspect of my right brain to kind of figure out. But sometimes with, like, certain projects, of course, like, you're kind of limited to certain things, which I know some people can find restrictive. But I still find that you don't have to limit yourself in just being that logistic math and numbers and everything like that. There are ways to mesh them together. When it comes to my own career, I would say it's helped me connect with people more. Not necessarily on the projects themselves, but, like, the fact that I have these creative aspects, I've been able to connect with people because I love doing things that are, I guess, more soft skill / creative. And it gets me, I don't know how to explain it, but it has helped me connect in a way that I wouldn't see myself if I was just strictly one thing and focused on one thing, if that makes mm-hmm. sense. Like, I don't know how to yeah. define it just yet.
Yeah.
Although I've been in my career for some time, but I think it really, like, has helped me be able to go into, like, different aspects of, like, just engineering and being able to just enjoy, like, different aspects of, like, my career.
Completely agree.
It makes complete sense.
Exactly. I think it makes complete sense. Like, I would think, like, because one thing I remember at uni, and I suppose school doesn't prep you for this, because in school they're always like, there's only one answer that's right, right? Mm-hmm. But, like, you get into uni for engineering and you find out that engineering is literally, there are multiple solutions. Any one of them could work, but it depends on, like, time or cost or, you know, the people and everything. And for that, you have to be creative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to know how to work with the people around you, but you also have to think, you know, a little bit to come up with a solution that's, like, you know, not going to take astronomically long or be super expensive. So that's left and right brain for me. And I thought that was, it was pretty daunting at first because I was like, what, there's not one right answer? Now it's like, it's fine.
And I think the soft skills that you touched on, like, spot on. Like, especially in leadership roles, we do need to have those two skills, right? Mm-hmm. Like, to lead a team, you not only need to be technical oriented, you need to know how to talk to people, how to communicate ideas. And when you say that you were, like, working with land development, perhaps by interacting with the client and, like, the contractors and everything, you actually have to develop those skills that are, like, communication, effective communication, you know. Exactly.
I want to jump into a bit of, like, a heavy one. I wanted to know, in your opinion, Vanessa, do you think there have been any specific challenges or benefits to being a woman in this male-dominated industry? In your personal opinion, have you seen any?
Yeah, I would say there have been challenges, and luckily for me, like, I don't think they have been as extreme as I've heard some other women have, and not to invalidate what they've been through. I think it has been a lot better in these times, but it's still not what it should be, if that, you know, kind of makes any sense. Because I think there's still times where, you know, I'm still, when I was in school, I was one of 10 girls in, and there was a 150 people person class. So we're still like 10%, right, of women in this industry. And then when it came to going into the career field, sometimes there would be people who didn't know that I was an engineer, and they would say, oh, like, are you a secretary? Or, oh, are you going to be taking notes? Or they're just all these assumptions, you know, assuming that I almost don't belong in this field. And sometimes even when it comes to, there was a time when I had to submit a project when I was in land development, and I was submitting it, talking to the reviewer, and they said, no, we're not going to accept this. Tell your boss, like, this, like, whatever, like, things need to change. I told my boss, I had him even talk to this reviewer, and he was just adamant about, no, he's not accepting the project. I came back to my boss and he's like, okay, well, let me try. He went to the reviewer at a different date, and he was able to get it through, like, no problem. And so sometimes I think that, you know, there was no changes to what we were submitting. The only thing that changed was me versus my supervisor. And he said, I basically said what he said, he told me to say with submitting. And I think the difference was the fact that I was a woman and a young woman submitting such a project. And I think that reviewer just did not accept for some reason.
Yeah.
There was no changes in the actual project submittal. So there's times like that. Again, like, although I work in the design aspect, luckily, especially now, my managers and my coworkers, they're very respectful. There are times when there are people who don't know me, who make, again, some of these assumptions that just bother me. And I know it's just minor, of not realizing that there is a woman here, or that, hey, let's not just say hi, gentlemen, in emails or anything like that, or assuming that I was assumed also that I was, like, a different position. And then when he was introducing, like, the team, and for some reason he was saying that I was, like, really good at the planning process. I was like, oh, are you talking about, like, a different Vanessa? And he's like, oh, no, I met you. But I'm like, oh, okay, well, I'm on the design team. So it just amazes me how people just kind of assume these things when I am the engineer. I do belong here. And, you know, what, just because I am a female woman engineer does not mean that, you know, you can just assume that I'm wrong sometimes, you know. Those are just, like, some instances. And luckily, I'm in the design aspect, so I hear a lot of my friends in the construction field, they get yelled at a lot by the contractors. So it's definitely some challenges that still need to be changed in our industry.
So when all these things just started happening for you, I guess there's two questions here. Like, did you ever imagine that you were going to go through this? Because I guess there is sort of, like, an understanding that engineering, it is a male-dominated industry, construction, incredibly dominated by males. And yes, we are moving forward, but there's still things to work on. And did anyone sort of, like, talk about it with you, or did you ever think that it was going to be an issue to be a female, or, like, that you were going to be treated different?
Not when I decided on my major. I did not think about it when I picked my major. I just said, okay, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to go through my classes. Oh, that's interesting. Now there's less and less of you in my classes. That's strange. Oh, now some of you have talked to contractors and they're very rude. Oh, that's interesting. Like, it's just kind of, as I went along in my career is when I started to see these things. And the more I've talked to other women in our industry, and just, like, I think in social media now, and especially you start seeing more of these things. But I did not expect it when I picked this career field. Yeah. And I think it's good that we're talking about it more, and I hope it doesn't stray some women into getting in these career fields because they're seeing what others are saying of those, like, really bad instances, which go viral, of course, but also it's like, that's not the case everywhere, right? At least for me, I think that I have a really good, I really enjoy the company that I work for, and I really think that my managers and bosses really support me. And they're my male colleagues, even though I do have female colleagues as well, but they're my male colleagues who still support me and advocate for me and I hope that more women experience that, even though, you know, it's not something, even though there are instances where we had difficulties as women.
Yeah. And I guess the second one, sorry, Sophie, was that when these things started happening, how did you work in your mindset? Because everything that happens in the outside, we can't really control, but how we react to things is genuinely the only thing that we can control. So did you go through like a pep talk? What was the pep talk?
Yeah. Or we you need have to like know. A network around you, you know, of females or male engineers that help you out in these situations.
Yeah, it's a combination of both of those things. Internal pep talk and also a support group of, you know, other women, and then also, you know, other male colleagues as well that I went to college with, that I always try to reach out to them and let them know like what's going on. But also, I think it took some time to figure out what to say in these situations, right? Walking it through with those colleagues, but also just giving the question and getting more confident in what I say of, what did you mean by that? Or could you tell me why you said that? I'm here. This is Vanessa, you know, making sure that they're aware that I am a female, not just, hey, guys, hey, gentlemen type of, you know, responses, and just kind of getting that confidence of being proud of who I am and being proud of knowing that I belong. And it takes a lot of time, really. It took me some confidence or time to gain this confidence. And I was talking to my coworkers earlier this week that I did say something that I was concerned about to one of our top bosses. And, you know, they were saying, oh, great job of saying such things. And they're like, wait, how did, you know, I know, like, how did you get that confidence to say what you had to say? And I think it was because I knew that I had a good support system that will back me up. And I knew that what I said was the truth that needed to be said. So I think it definitely takes some time. And if for anyone who's like listening to, you know, I hope you get that support system. And if you don't have that currently, you can talk to us right here. And also, you know, there's a lot of people out there, you know, in STEM that I think will be there to support you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And yeah, I completely agree with what you said about, you know, you need to know that, especially in the workplace, that if you need to say something to, I guess, just to someone that you feel is overstepping a boundary, you need to know that the bosses or your work people have, you know, your back, and you're not going to be in trouble for saying something like that. I think having that security is the best way to make change, because basically, you know, there's advocates for you.
That's right. But also, like, for example, when things go south, I'm sorry, just coming from experience, and you do speak up and you actually don't have that support network at work, remember that you have that support network outside of work. Yeah. And that's why it's so important to build not just connections outside of like the company that you work at, but also like to have your friends and like your family. They're all gonna like be there for you. And perhaps at this certain company, they might not do anything about it, or they might brush it off, but you're speaking your truth, you're standing up for yourself. And that's the right thing to do, I think. Well,
you might not have kicked the door into exactly. change to that company yet, but you're creating a chain of events that might help someone else later on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's really important.
Yeah.
Even though, yeah, like how learning from experience, sometimes it might be the hard way, but it's your truth.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah. And sometimes, you know, when these things happen, it's a blessing in disguise. Like, maybe it just needed to happen, like you speaking up, and if it turned out to be a bad situation, maybe that was just better than just continuing to be in a very unhealthy environment that was just going to, like, there's so many other companies that are more aware of the, I guess, inclusion and equity thing. And it's better for you to be in a healthy environment for you to learn and grow, and like people that support you. And it's ideal for you, the career development.
these conversations, the reason I see them as important is because, like, you know, we always talk about that there's two issues with, you know, women in STEM. The first is obviously the awareness at a young age and getting them involved in STEM then. But the second is the retention issue. And the retention issue is probably from, I mean, it could be people just not aligning themselves with this industry, that's fine. But it, like, a lot of it is not having, you know, great experiences at companies, like, you know, behavior like this or worse, you know. And unfortunately, it's important for women to know that, you know, they need to have support systems and support networks. But also, when these experiences happen, they're not, they shouldn't be like a deterrent, you know, like, we need to create an environment where we can talk about these things, say that they happen.
Yeah.
Create an element of solidarity through that, but also, yeah, like, tips, like, you know, having a support network or being able to talk about it and be just recognizing that it's a little bit character building. You know, it teaches you how to be confident. It teaches you how not to, you know, just say yes and be uncomfortable and laugh it off. Like, you know, the stupid defense mechanism that we have, that if you're uncomfortable, you laugh.
Yeah.
Heck, I've done.
Yeah.
It's really bad.
I have it too. And it doesn't help. It doesn't help the other person know you're uncomfortable. But if you're not put through those situations, you don't essentially change.
You don't learn.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
And it also, like, when you're in these industries, like, the more we're there, like, 10% at your university, 25 at mine, which was amazing. But you're
10%.
Yeah, that was not great. But, like, you're adding numbers. So men will be more accustomed to working, you know, with women and understanding how they think, how they should interact, how they shouldn't interact, just by us being there.
Mm-hmm. I think what really helped me also gain that strength in realizing, no, like, it doesn't matter, like, what those people say that really can make people want to leave the industry. The fact that I did work so hard to get my degree, I worked so hard to, you know, get to where I am, I don't think anyone can take that away from me, right? You know, nobody who thinks that they think that I don't belong there. No, I do belong there. And although, you know, the imposter syndrome sometimes hits, I just try to remind myself, like, I've worked so hard to get to where I am. And, you know, even though it does build character development, finding the right people for me is what's really important. And if, you know, when it comes to the retention and bringing more people in STEM, that's part of what I love doing. I love advocating for, you know, young people to be in STEM. I try to do as much, like, how should I say, like, K-12 outreach as much as possible in any way that I can. But also having those conversations as well of how do we keep women in this industry? If it really isn't for them, then that's fine. But
yeah,
there is something that's, like, because of the industry that's getting women out, like, what can we do to make it better, right? And I think it's such a big picture thing that we all need to work on, and I don't know what the real answer is, because I know one of the biggest issues is related to when women have kids, and some women do want to have kids, and when they do, depends on where they live and whether or not they get maternity leave, whether or not they have the support system to take care of their children. And then once they're ready to go back in the industry, are they welcome back with open arms? And that's another issue in itself, right? Because although they're temporarily out of the industry, you know, what if they want to come back? How are they welcomed? What are we doing to say, like, oh, you've been out for 9 months or a year or 5 years. What did you do? And why should we hire you after that? And it's such a daunting question, right? Like, why should we hire you when we have all these other people that have been working 5 years straight, but you got out of work for your children? But this is a thing, right? Like, that's probably why a lot of women don't feel like they're welcomed back in. But we need to change that.
But how does it work over there? So in terms of mat leave, and is it like they still have the job at the company and they can go away for a few months and they still retain the same position? Or
For California, I think we have a pretty fairly good maternity leave, in a sense that we do, like for most companies, we do keep our job after we return. I think it's like, it depends on what criteria that you use, but I think I've had coworkers gone for 6 months. And they're welcome back, and you know they still luckily now they're able to work hybrid, so some days they work from home and able to take care of their kids. So thankfully for me, my company is very supportive in that way, but I've heard so many women in other states within the US who don't have a very good maternity leave, and it's very difficult for them to feel like some women to even have kids because they don't have that well of an option and figuring out what their next plan is once they do take that step.
Yeah. That's hard. Wow. I'm pretty sure over here, is it all companies, Lau? Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think having maternity leave and being able to come back is pretty standard.
Yeah, and I think
is how it should be.
It just amazes me that after having had a child, 6 months later, you like return to the industry. Like, not just because of the stress that your body goes through as a woman in 9 months before and when you're delivering the child, it's just like also the separation anxiety that a mother feels, because I have noticed from colleagues that have been in maternity leave and everything, they actually feel so guilty that they left the child at home. It's not even like, oh, I'm coming here to work and blah, blah. It's like, or like, oh, like I am not progressing my career. The worry is like, I'm a bad mother. Mm-hmm. I'm not there for them. So it's like, what tools also are organizations providing these females to talk about these things, you know? Because sometimes, yes, we bring ourselves to work after 6 months, but how are we dealing with the guilt and how is that guilt affecting our performance? So I think it would be good for organizations to consider that. In Australia, I think they're pretty good with that. And I think organizations are fighting for, not fighting, what an interesting word that I chose, but organizations are, well, at least the organization that I work for is trying to encourage males also to take paternity leave and make it just as equal to the female one. Because that's another thing that would challenge the gender roles, mm-hmm. right? Like if we're talking about equal paternity leave, that's a good thing, because we're not assuming that the female is the one that has to stay at home. That's yeah. my piece of
that's a contribution huge contribution to this. To fixing, you know, that how long a woman has to be away is if the husband is able to be there, or partner, or whatever, you know, father, let's just go with that, is able to be around for the child, because it is important for, like, you know, there's more and more studies coming in that it's important for the formative years of the child. So it's good for the child as well, but it's definitely good for, you know, a woman looking to come back to her career. I just think it's absolutely wild that you're saying that in some states they have to literally reapply or start looking for jobs. Like, imagine having a kid and then you're like, shit, I don't have a job anymore.
I don't know the exact ways that some states are, but I've seen some women in some industry, in like engineering, for example, talking about how they don't know, like, maternity leave is almost nothing. I think Texas is maybe one. I don't know the exact.
Texas is so backwards. Yes. Sorry, Texas.
It's like a time capsule.
It's so interesting. Yeah, I think. Again, I don't know the exacts, but from what I've heard, they don't really have maternity. Like, they have to use their own PTO, or like, it's just not
PTO.
Paid time off.
Oh wow! All right.
It's very difficult from what I've heard. But California, wow. I'm thankful that I have a lot of women in my company who have had children in the last 2-3 years. So I have strong faith in that I will be taken care of, but unfortunately, it's not like that throughout the states.
Gosh, needs to be so
much. Yeah, and throughout the world as well, I imagine. Yeah. Well, I guess we're only looking
spicy, yeah. too small.
So now talking about this, which is a good segue to some of the most, I guess, controversial topics in this inclusion and stuff. But do you think, when someone says that the gender pay disparity is fixed, what do you think about that? Like, do you think it's true, or what's your sort of like opinion on those comments?
I think it's not fake. I know some people say, oh, it's not real, and they try to like, I think I've like made like some social media thing about like the gender pay as well, and some people have commented and say that's not true, and I don't
literally, and that's why we put this there, because we keep getting that. Even I was talking to someone the other day, and she was a woman in finance maybe, and she was like, oh, but like haven't we solved this problem? And I was like, where?
Yeah,
it's because people don't understand they think that the disparity is like the gender pay gap is equals to like getting paid the same. I think they assume that that's the problem, and that's not the problem, guys. It's not the problem at all.
Yeah, I think there's so many factors in that as well, because it's a matter of, okay, well, what types of jobs to women versus men, and like the fact that again, like why I promote a lot of young girls to get into engineering, for example, because we do get paid a lot more. Paid fairly well, and a lot of girls aren't like if they don't choose this industry, you know, they're losing out on possibly getting that right. Not to say any other careers aren't good because of the pay, but that's part of possibly what those statistics are basing off of as well. And then I think also talking to colleagues, like when you're graduating your universities, if you don't talk to, like, not just your female colleagues about what they're getting paid, you should talk to also the male and say, okay, does this seem fair? Because if not, if you're not talking to them.
We're doing the same tasks, they say.
Yeah, we're doing the same tasks. But then if you don't really, you know, see that you're fairly even, women might be losing out on that. And then another thing is, like, I think a lot of us women sometimes we don't feel as confident to advocate for ourselves. And like I mentioned earlier, it takes time to get to that point. And just last year, I really helped advocate for myself, and actually, you know, it helped in some way. And I realized that I needed to get an increase to meet a certain, you know, threshold. And so if I didn't advocate for myself, I would be under what maybe some of my equals would be, right? So there's just so many factors that I think makes that statement a fact, that women are not getting paid as much, because there's multiple factors relating to it, and it could be like snowballed. If all of those factors aren't considered, then you're just continually not being paid as much as men.
I'm really curious. I love, like, obviously we're here in this platform because we're all passionate about the same things, but what was the switch that made you want to be an advocate for, you know, women in STEM?
Yeah, that's a great question. Because when I was in school, I don't think I would, like, I still did, like, outreach and community service type things, but it wasn't until maybe just before the pandemic, like 2018, 2019, around that time frame, and I've already graduated and been working in the industry, I just started to see more and more of, you know, women in our industry, but also talking to other people of my experience and realizing that, wow, my experience is really unique in a sense that like I mentioned earlier, I stumbled into this career. And if I don't continue to talk about STEM, then maybe some of these other young people won't stumble into this career like I did. Maybe they can learn earlier than me. Maybe they can find this career before I found this career. You know, so it's just kind of what inspired me to realize, like, once I started doing more and more of those outreach through K through 12, realizing how much they enjoyed what I do and thinking how we're like superheroes in a way of realizing that this is what I hope that they find this inspiring in some way. And I hope that they are the future engineers and find it before I did. It's more of helping the people before you, right? Like, although I didn't have that reach, like somebody really fully, like I had some mentors, but I didn't have somebody like giving me all this advice. I'm trying to be that for others. And I think that's what really inspired me to continue to do what I do.
So this work that you do, the K-12, is it like workshops or speeches? Like, what do you do?
Yeah, so I'm involved in the American Society of Civil Engineers. So I'm really involved in that organization since I started at my university. And I'm also, so we do local like outreach events like Engineering Day at the Mall, which we do a lot of different like engineering activities and teaching them like the kids, like K-12, like how to do different engineering things. It could be like rockets or like, I don't know, cars and all sorts of things like that. And then I'm involved in ASCE's Committee on Pre-College Outreach. And that's really focused, again, on talking about like how we can do better, how we can, you know, continue to improve and do STEM programs throughout, you know, the U.S. This past week, I was involved in the Feminear program at my school, or like where I graduated at SDSU. So Feminear program, it's like, I think it's a couple years old, new program, focused on K-12, like elementary school, middle school, and high school girls getting into engineering. And so I actually did speak to 11th and 12th grade girls earlier this week, talking to them about my experience as a civil engineer. And then another thing that I am involved in is ACE, which is the Architecture Construction Engineering program here again locally. And I go to a high school about once a week and help them work through a program. And they actually have a presentation coming up in the next couple of weeks. And they work with not just civil engineer, but we work with architects, contractors, anyone in the ACE industries, and get them really interested in these programs. So K-12 outreach is my bread and butter. I love it so much, and I love being involved with these students. And that's just really what inspires me to keep going.
Oh my gosh, that's absolutely, I love the work that you're doing and getting the awareness out there. It's important for, I think, both men and women in the industry just to be able to share that experience and just show children what it means like. Because like you said, I stumbled upon like this industry as well. I'd sort of had a little bit of exposure, like, you know, Nat Geo watching megastructures.
Yeah, right.
That was all I thought it was, you know, and you never know until you're in there what it is. And sometimes it's just, you just think like, oh, if there was someone to have told me when I was younger, then, you know, there was so much more that can be done, because there's so many more like foundational stepping stones that I feel like you just miss out on if you're starting it all at like you're 20.
Yeah.
A big part of sharing what you do, even if it's a K-12, but if we just like, you know, how you reached out to us is through social media, you know, so you do have it in there that you are a content creator. How much of a split in terms of, I guess, work and brain capacity and time does it create between your day job and doing all this?
That's a great question, because I'm still figuring that out.
Same.
It's definitely a balance that sometimes some weeks are more than others, I think. And I think lately I have stepped a little bit away on the content creation and just focused. I'm trying to take the professional engineering exam. In California, you have to pass the 8-hour professional engineering exam, and then you have to take 2 8-hour.
Yeah.
They sit you in there for 8 hours.
Yes.
Girl, what are they making you do?
Problems. All the problems.
It's not like a collaborative, you know, design problem.
I wish it was. It's just me. But in the U.S., known as like a professional engineer, I still see myself as an engineer, even though I don't have that certification just yet. But in the U.S., you have to take this 8-hour exam that's standardized, and it's right now computer based. So you can go to a testing center and you are tested for, it splits it up into four hours. The first 4 hours is all general civil if you take the civil engineering professional engineering exam, so all your disciplines of civil engineering, and then the second half, the other 4 hours, is on the focus discipline. Like I would take transportation, for example, but you can take structural, like focused questions. And once you pass that exam, in California is the only state that does this, but in California, after you've taken the 8-hour exam, you still have to take two other exams that are about 2.5 hours long for a seismic and survey.
No.
I know. This has been a journey for myself. But I'm continually, I have taken this exam multiple times, unfortunately. But it's a journey. And that's part of what I also share on my social media, because it is tough. And I've been able to talk to others, and even like past male coworkers have told me it's okay, you know, it's okay if you don't pass right away. It's reassuring that I'm not alone, in the sense that it's a difficult exam, and it doesn't define who I am, because I think I'm doing well in my job, and I think my supervisor is really like, you know, they really love the work that I do, but to get to the next step is having to pass these exams and get my professional engineering exam and licensure. So it's a challenge.
And the 8 hours sounds really full on. Do you think being so active in this media has like a negative stigma as how you're going to be perceived, like competency at the workplace?
So that's a really great question, because especially with nowadays, everyone's using social media, right? Especially like the younger generation too, like that's even coming up after us. Like they're using social media all the time. And I think it's something that I'm also navigating myself. I think for me, I use Instagram the most. And then I sometimes post on TikTok, and then sometimes I also post on LinkedIn, and it kind of varies on the comfortability of, and also, you know, still being very aware of what you do post, because, I think there is a negative stigma if, you know, you say something inappropriate that, you know, could lead back to you / back to the company that you end up working for, right? There's that negative stigma. But I think, at least for me, I try not to talk specifically about where I work, what specific projects I do, because I try to keep that separation, because I'm still my own person. When it comes to LinkedIn, I do talk about obviously my company and what I do there, but Instagram and TikTok, I try to keep those separate, because I'm still my own person and I don't want to tie it. Because although like I am within my company, not all the things that I say is the view of the company. And so trying to keep that separation, but, you know, sometimes I do feel like embarrassed when I do post some things. I'm like, oh, that's
somebody. Sort of what I was wondering. Yeah.
Sometimes people probably think it's cringe.
Yeah, I do think that sometimes
when we post stuff,
the things that I post are cringe. I have a reel that I'm like, that's so cringe. Why did I do that?
Yeah, sometimes I have to like pretend like, just if you don't say anything about it, if I hope that like I have coworkers that do follow me. Luckily they're like within my age group, so it, like I feel like a little bit okay. But if my like other bosses saw it, I would be so embarrassed. So I kind of try to forget and sometimes hope that they don't ever watch it. But yeah, that's the part that's like, I think I haven't had that instance where like my big bosses have ever seen my social media. And I think that, and maybe it's a good thing. Maybe that's why I'm like, okay, it's okay. But if I continue to like,
but
think
do you
about
feel
it,
like there would be, they would probably see you as any less intellectual in that sense if they did see it.
That is kind of a worry sometimes, because I do like, but I,
because it's different, right?
Yeah.
We work in a like intellectual field, and social media is like, you know, about being, you know, whatever, almost social, an act or whatever, like, you know, you're being a bit more dramatic, you're being friendly, you're being something they don't see in the
office. More playful.
Yeah. More yeah. playful, yeah. Yeah. It's very scary sometimes. I think that's what stops me sometimes, and I try to just like give that F it. Like, I'm just gonna post.
Yes.
Sometimes I just that's really good. I don't think that's the best advice, maybe, but also
no, it's good.
Also, if I didn't
just be yourself,
being myself, you know, I don't know what the best answer is for that, but I also think that if somebody wants to post on social media but also be in our technical field, do both. If that, like, it's scary sometimes, and just forget that mm-hmm. people are watching and just do it for you. Because if I wasn't posting on social media, I wouldn't be connecting with the people that I do.
Absolutely agree with you on that one, Vanessa. I feel like since we started our journey as well, we've gotten to meet amazing people like yourself.
And a lot of the times I think that your fear of what other people have to say about you comes from, like, you know, that protective voice inside your head, but also it's like we are our biggest critics. So a lot of the times people receive it really well. So just go for it. Thank you, Vanessa, so much for coming here and sharing your story, and also for letting us, you know, be part of your journey.
Yeah, thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Well, thank you again for having me. And honestly, I really enjoyed this conversation, getting to know both of you as well. And just, yeah, the reason why, I like doing all this is to hopefully bring more awareness and also hopefully get more people, you know, inspired to do what we're doing as well.
Love it.